If you'll open your Bibles tonight to the book of Galatians, we want to do some preliminaries before we actually get into an expository treatment of the text, which will take place over the next few Sunday nights. And I will apologize in advance for the way I'm planning to present this. I've got some slides, and I typically don't just teach a class and do a PowerPoint presentation here, although some of you may prefer that over a sermon. But whatever your taste is, that's what we're going to do tonight. So we're going to be looking at some background, contextual information, and some history. And so those of you that like that sort of thing should enjoy that this evening. Paul's letter to the Galatians has been referred to as the Magna Carta of Christian liberty. You'll remember that back in the year 1215, King John of England began to abuse his power and lord it over his subjects. And so a group of noblemen came together and insisted that he come up with this document. And that document guaranteed certain unalienable rights to people on the basis of their humanity, whether they were noble or common men. And so that document has been enshrined in our history as well as England's history as a guarantor of basic human rights and liberties. And so this letter to the Galatians has taken on that nickname, the Magna Carta of Christian literature, because of Paul's defense of the freedom that we have in Jesus Christ. Now, we're going to see that applies specifically towards those who at the very beginning of the early church were engaged in the practice that we refer to today as Judaizing. That is, trying to bring people back under the law. Paul says we are free from the law. We are free in Christ. We are saved by grace, not by circumcision and all the things attendant to the law. And so that's the direction that he goes in this book. Now, what I want to do is just go through real quickly some of the basics that we always encounter as we go through this. Authorship is not a problem because there in the very first verse of the very first chapter, he identifies himself as the author. I know no scholars of any import today that would argue against Pauline authorship. There were a few 19th century biblical scholars that argued against it, but it's very difficult to do that. He identifies himself. You see a lot of personal biographical information, especially in the first two chapters. He ends up by saying, "I write this with my own hand in these large letters." His identity is all over the letter, so there's no real argument with that. The recipients of the letter, however, is a different story. There is a huge debate that is ongoing, has gone on for quite some time, as to who actually received the letter. Now, this is the only letter that the Apostle Paul ever wrote addressed to multiple congregations. Always before, he sends a letter to Rome or to Corinth or to Ephesus or to Philippi. Here, he sends a letter to the churches in Galatia. Now, the thing that makes it difficult is that back in the early days of the Roman Empire, and just before the days of the Roman Empire, there were a group of Celtic warriors, and the Celtic nation comes out of what is referred to as Gaul, which is modern-day France. They moved into the British Isles. They also moved across Europe. They nearly wrecked Rome in the process of their travels across. They were a bunch of marauding warriors. They finally settled in northern Turkey, and they named that area Galatia after the Gauls. So it was Gaul land, literally. And so they settled there. They had their own king. The Romans there were in power, and the Romans allowed that king to rule for a period. But when he died, then they took it over as a province of Rome. Now, when they did that, they expanded the territory to the south. And so that area that was just known ethnically as Galatia, all the locals just said, this is Galatia. Rome said, no, politically there's this whole southern region, and we're going to annex that, and that will be called Galatia. So the big question is, did Paul write his letter to the northern ethnic group of Galatians, or did he write his letter to the southern political, by definition under Rome, group of churches? So that then becomes the big question that's asked. I'll tell you up front, I believe Paul wrote his letter to the southern Galatian churches, and this is the reason why. One, Paul was a Roman citizen, and Paul used Roman geographical terminology over and over again in his letters. He writes in 1 Corinthians 16, and he speaks of Macedonia, Achaia, and Asia. Now, the locals didn't necessarily use those names, but the Romans did. And Paul uses the Roman name. In the very same chapter where he refers to Macedonia, Achaia, and Asia, all German, all Roman terms, he also mentions in that same chapter the churches of Galatia. And so it would make me think that he is leaning toward that southern definition of the geographical area. Paul was in the habit of employing Roman names rather than local names. Secondly, he talks in the same chapter in 1 Corinthians 16, remember where he talks about the collection, lay by in store. He's talking about a collection that's going to be made, and that collection is going to be made for the saints in Judea, and we read about that in Acts chapter 20. And there in Acts chapter 20, we see a list of the individuals who travel with Paul to make that gift in Rome. And two of the men come from cities in the political southern part of Galatia. Gaius of Derbe and Timothy of Lystra accompany him. So again, that makes me believe that Paul is writing to these southern Galatian churches. There's no evidence anywhere in the book of Acts that Paul even traveled up in that northern area. None of those cities are ever mentioned in the book of Acts. They're not mentioned in Paul's writings. But we do have reference to those southern cities of Lystra and Derbe and Iconium in that southern political area. So I'm going with the southern theory. If you read any commentary, it'll talk about the northern theory and the southern theory. And I think that there's strong evidence for the southern theory. If you want to talk to me about that and convince me otherwise, I'm open to being reconvinced on it. Now, the date of the book, I think, depends largely on which of those two theories that you take. In the book of Galatians, Paul mentions two visits to Jerusalem. He went up the first time following his time away as Jesus revealed to him the truth of the gospel 3 years after his conversion of his time in Arabia. And then he went up the second time when he made that trip to carry the money to the churches in Judea. Now, he made a third trip, and it was a very important trip. And the third trip was when he was summoned to the council in Jerusalem. And we know that that was 50 A.D., yet he never makes reference to that in the book of Galatians. Now, if he had been to Jerusalem, at the council of Jerusalem, surely he would have mentioned that in the book of Galatians, because that's the whole issue of the book. Can someone become a Christian without first becoming a Jew? Well, you remember the apostles and leaders in Jerusalem sent the word out, and they said, you know, we don't think you should force people to do that anymore. And then they gave a few restrictions on Gentile Christians, but they didn't bind them to circumcision or any of the Jewish law. If that decision had already been made, then Paul could have just written to the Galatian churches and said, here's a copy of the letter that came from the leaders in Jerusalem. But it's not mentioned. So that moves the date back before the year 50 A.D. Now, that brings it back to the earliest of any of the New Testament documents as far as their chronology goes. the date, probably somewhere between 47 and 49. It's after his first missionary journey. And Paul writes to them and says, I can't believe that you are so soon buying into another gospel. And that would again put it right after his first missionary journey and put it at this earlier date period between 48 and 49 and before the council in Jerusalem. Now, the outline of the book is thus. Chapters 1 and 2, Paul defends his apostleship because those who were Judaizing, trying to get these early Christians to become Jews and practice before they became Christians, they were saying Paul is not even a real apostle. He was not with Jesus and the others. He makes this claim on the road to Damascus. And so Paul spends considerable time. In fact, he's going to have to do that in a lot of his epistles, defend the fact that he was an apostle born out of season, but still an apostle every bit as much as the other men who served in that capacity. In chapters 3 and 4, he goes into some pretty detailed doctrinal arguments for salvation by grace and not by works of the law. And then in the last two chapters, there's a picture of practical living under grace. What's it look like for a Christian who lives out his or her life under grace? So this is the outline of the book that we're going to be studying, and I'll turn that off, and you can put Galatians back up if you want to. I want to just briefly go through what we're going to be doing and not actually get into it tonight. Paul's letter to Galatians was not sent to a single congregation, but to a larger group because of the tremendous danger that existed with this veer to the left, away from the true gospel into Judaizing teaching. This is an urgent epistle. Paul dispenses with niceties in this epistle. In all the others, he begins with, I'm thankful to God every time I hear about the good things that are going on there in the congregation. Paul has nothing good to say as he begins this letter. He gets right down to the nitty-gritty, and he, right after the greeting, just says, first words there in verse 6, I am astonished that you are so quickly deserting the one who called you by the grace of Christ and are turning to a different gospel. Boy, that was a slap in the face to those Christians as they circulated that letter throughout those churches. The beginning of these churches occurred when Paul went through on that first missionary journey. And he went to Pisidian Antioch, a Roman colony. That's where they shook the dust off their feet. He went to Iconium, and that's where they were plotting his death. He went to Lystra. That's where they were initially worshipped as gods, and then those fickle people turned on them and were ready to kill them. And in Derbe, we're told that many souls were won to Christ. So these are the early churches there in the Galatia area. And so Paul goes back home to his supporting church, and that was in Antioch of Syria. And he and Barnabas worked there. In Acts, it says he was there a long time. He was there for several years. And presumably during his time there in Syrian Antioch, he got word of all these things that were taking place in these newly planted churches. And so he sits down and he writes off this letter. Again, all kinds of things are made of it. Most of Paul's letters are taken down by a secretary. Some say he was so angry and so upset and so personally involved that he wrote it out with his own hand. Maybe that's why he did. We don't read of him doing that in any of his other letters. Now, these new converts had been left behind, but also Paul left enemies in every one of those towns where he was there in that Galatian area. The enemies that he dealt with initially were Jews in the community. The Romans didn't really pay much mind to him, but the Jews were appalled that this man who is in here, who is Jewish and who has accepted Jesus as the Messiah, is now bringing people into this new group of Jesus followers, and they're appalled at the Gentiles' entrance into the church on such loose terms. He didn't require circumcision. He didn't require Sabbath keeping. He didn't require the kosher diet that they had always esteemed and held high. Peter, remember, when he saw that vision of the sheet, he says, I've never touched anything common or unclean. And now Paul is going into these communities, and he is sanctioning all these things that they held dear. Well, in just a short time, even the new Christians, many of whom were Jews, now they have become believers in Jesus Christ, they were persuaded that they needed to back up a little bit. They had demonstrated faith in Jesus, put their trust in Him, but now they're being told, you know, you're really sinning by not continuing to keep all of the Jewish regulations. And so they begin to do these things. It was here in Galatia that Jewish legalism really had its beginning. At an early stage, even the apostles in Jerusalem didn't seem overly concerned by this. Paul seems to be the only one who says, do you not see what's happening to the church? Do you not see the danger here? And this letter, this first letter in the New Testament canon, is fired off because Paul sees something that even the other apostles are just not seeing. In chapter 2 of Galatians, he talks about one of the other apostles and how he was just lulled into complacency. Look in chapter 2 down in verse 11 of the text. There it says, when Peter came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he was clearly in the wrong. Before certain men came from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they arrived, he began to draw back and separate himself from the Gentiles because he was afraid of those who belonged to the circumcision group. That was the name of the Judaizers. Peter was lulled into complacency. He was falling back in line with these teachers who said, you've got to go back under the law of Moses. Paul saw and understood clearly what was about to happen. And if such a spirit of legalism crept into the church, that would have been the end. If the church as a whole had bought into this, it would have simply become another Jewish sect and would have faded into oblivion. Paul is very clear about how real this danger was. Look in verses 8 and 9 of chapter 1. There in verses 8 and 9, Paul says, but even if we or an angel from heaven should preach a gospel other than the one we preach to you, let him be eternally condemned. He uses the word anathema. Some versions translate it cursed. He means cut off from God and eternity in hell. That's how serious it was. As we have already said, so now I say it again, if anybody is preaching to you a gospel other than what you accepted, let him be eternally condemned. Paul says it's that serious. This is a salvation issue. This is something that will cause these Galatian Christians to lose their souls. Look in chapter 5, verse 2. Paul again talks about how serious a matter this is. He says, mark my words, I, Paul, tell you that if you let yourself be circumcised, Christ will be of no value to you at all. If you dare go backwards from your commitment to Jesus Christ, and if you think that it takes Jesus' death on the cross plus circumcision, he said, then you're out. You've lost your relationship with Jesus Christ. It is that critical a matter. Look in chapter 5, verse 4. He goes on to say in that verse, you who are trying to be justified by law have been alienated from Christ. You have fallen away from grace. Is that someone's telephone? I'll preach fast here. We normally have weather spotter. Do we have someone?
Flash flood warning.
Oh, okay. We're all right. Flash flood warning. It's not a tornado. Okay. I'm almost done anyway here. Paul is simply warning all of these Christians this is not some simple matter of correction. He had written to the Corinthian church, and he had dealt with some pretty serious matters. He had talked about Christians that were taking each other to court. He had talked about those who had pride excessively and puffed themselves up. And he had talked about those who were misusing spiritual gifts, but never anything that comes close to what he writes to the Galatian churches. What they were doing was going to cause them to lose their eternal salvation. Now, in time, Peter, after his confrontation by Paul, and the other apostles would come to see the seriousness of this. The council in Jerusalem was convened. They were able to send word out to all the Gentile churches and to the Judaizers who were trying to corrupt those Gentile churches. And they did an about-face, and the church moved on in a pure way from that point on. Paul explained to these Galatian Christians that there were only two kinds of righteousness. There was righteousness by law. That's what they were advocating. That is an intrinsic righteousness. It's from within yourself. A righteousness that I engineer by keeping all the rules, keeping all the laws. And then he said the other kind of righteousness is righteousness by faith in Jesus Christ. That's an extrinsic righteousness. It's one that comes from the outside. And today, that's what we preach. The church is alive and well. Jesus predicted that the gates of hell would not be closed against his kingdom. And I am grateful that today, that the same gospel that Paul fought for in the first century, even though there have been battles throughout time, that we can preach that very same gospel in its purity. And this is the story of Galatians in a nutshell, and I'm going to close with this. There are only two kinds of righteousness. Paul defines them in the book of Romans this way. He says there is a righteousness that is done from inside ourselves, that intrinsic. It is self-righteousness. And we all know that the Pharisees and others who bought into self-righteousness were not right with God. The only other righteousness is the one that comes by faith in Jesus Christ. And that is a righteousness outside of ourselves. It is the gift that God gives us. I'm not righteous. The best I can muster is like filthy rags. But God gives us, through Jesus, this righteousness that we're going to be looking at. Let me ask you to do this. Before next Sunday night, would you read through the book of Galatians in its entirety? It's only 6 chapters long. Read through the book, and then we're going to begin back in chapter 1, and we're going to begin working our way through the book, Sunday night by Sunday night. And I know it will be a blessing to all of us who are willing to dig into it deeply and listen to the message of the Apostle Paul. Tonight, we want to close with an invitation, and Paul is going to talk in here about a response to the gift that God gives, and Jesus has already done the work. He's already purchased salvation, and he offers it as a free gift. He simply asks us to take it, and the way Jesus asks us to take it is by renouncing our sins and confessing him and going through the waters of baptism. He will then give us that gift of forgiveness and add us to the church, to his kingdom. Tonight, if you need to respond in faith to Jesus Christ, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.